Hello there, and welcome to Relationship Revelations. I'm Sheila Grace Harvey, and I'm going to be talking a little bit today about how do we overcome our fears and dilemmas, and how do we create that kind of unique life that we want for ourselves. And I know that a lot of people, including myself, I've been experiencing kind of a lot of fear, and you know, some of it is that I think there is a lot of fear on the planet at the moment, and you know, also it also kind of touches into any fears and anything that we may be holding. And the lovely thing about experiencing something like fear is that it is an opportunity to heal, let go of things that no longer work for us. And you know, many times in our life, it's not really about what happens to us that really is our dilemma. It's what we tell ourselves as a result of what happens to us that becomes the difficulty. What we basically have underneath is some core beliefs that are unconscious that run us. And I thought I would just share with you some of my core beliefs, which I have recognized and been working with in my life. And mine come down to that I'm mostly aware of. They fall into about four categories, and one of them is that I'm not worthy. Another one is that I don't deserve, you know, so I don't deserve great relationships. I don't deserve to have lots of money. I don't deserve to have the life I want. Another one is I'm unlovable. And another one is the world is not a safe space. Now, to give you a little bit of background, I had a sister who's a few years older than I am, and she was really jealous of me from the moment that I was born. So, you know, I had a whole lot of history of things that happened to me. I remember that one day when I was about five, she threw a brick at my head, and if anyone's ever had a brick hit them on their forehead, you know that there's a tremendous amount of blood. And I always laugh because, you know, parents are always in the wrong places. You know, my father was, I think, sitting on the toilet at the time, and all he heard was this extraordinary wailing from me as I was, obviously very, very hurt. But it was really a litany. I can really put, if I want to, do a whole list of things of, chasing me, and I fell over on some stones and had to have stitches in my knee. She threw me down the stairs. I mean, it's amazing what we do and how we hit out when we're feeling that, well, basically we don't feel good about ourselves, otherwise we wouldn't do it. So it's understandable that from my perspective as a very young child, all of these things are happening to me, that my view of the world is that it's not a safe space. So that there would be times where stepping forward to do something would be almost like, well, I'm going to get hurt. So that was the unconscious thing underneath that has, you know, often affects the way that I have done things. Now, I was in a training many, many years ago, and I was doing an exercise with a woman, and it turned out that she was an older sister who had done terrible things to her younger sister, and I was the younger sister who'd had terrible things done to me. And what we both found really fascinating was that we both were hurting. People hit out because they are hurting. People who are loving don't need to do that. So I was able to come into a tremendous place of loving and compassion for my sister and recognizing that, you know, she was dealing with what, you know, her limitations at the time. And, you know, from her perspective, she had been in a situation where she had been the apple of everybody's eye until I came along. My parents actually lived with my mother's parents. So she was doted on by parents, grandparents, my uncle. And then when my mother was in hospital having me, they moved into into the first house that I ever grew up in. And, of course, I came home to a new place, to a young child who she felt had used her position, and all of a sudden she didn't have this whole kind of group of people around, and it really affected and changed the way she saw the world. And, of course, that is what happens. We tell ourselves things as a result. Often we might blame somebody else when in actual fact it really is, you know, it was nothing to do with me. I just brought forward, unfortunately for her, some of the things she needed to learn, and she brought forward for me a lot of things I needed to learn. And I was very naive, very innocent, And to a great extent, because of that, I was always kind of like very, very trusting, but trusting in a sense of having no levels of discernment. And really what we want to be doing is trusting ourselves enough so that we do have those levels of discernment, so that we're able to look at situations and what's going on and not put ourselves in harm's way. So, you know, I can understand why I thought I was unlovable. And also if, in terms of if my sister, I couldn't ever think that my sister couldn't love me. So if I didn't think my sister couldn't love me, if I didn't think that was a possibility, then she did love me. And therefore loving had with it being hurt. She also was, you know, often very loud too and sort of shouted down, so there's a lot of verbal stuff as well. So it's a, I grew up believing that people could love you, but they could hurt you. Not consciously. This is none of its consciousness. But you could see why I would end up with some core beliefs like I wasn't worthy, I didn't deserve, that I was unlovable, that the world wasn't a safe space. And probably karmically, these were things that I came in to learn. So I came into the perfect sister and the perfect family so that I was able to learn what I needed to do, and that was how do I still love myself no matter what's going on, no matter what seems to be showing up in my life. You know, how do I take care of me in a really, really great way? So, you know, most of us have fear show up. We really, I suppose, when you get down to emotions, there's really only two emotions, and that's fear and love. And yet when we're born, the only two fears we actually have are falling and a fear of loud noises. So along the way, what it means is that we have had learned responses to things our parents have done, our families, our friends, and we pick up a whole lot of fears. And of course, along the way, as things happen to us, and the more we try to protect ourselves with our little sort of invisible wall around us to keep ourselves safe, the more we cut ourselves off from the loving and that exchange that we have with people. So fear can keep us really stuck. I mean, fear is like glue. It really keeps us stuck to where we're at. It makes it very hard to go out and succeed in whatever it is that we want to do. And success is a very personal definition. But we can, the fear can be subtle. It can sabotage our efforts to do the things that we want to do. And, you know, a definition that I think I've heard a lot of people say about fear is that it's fantasy expectations appearing real. So that means they're not real. That we often tell ourselves something mentally, and because we do that, we kind of cycle down into the emotions, and up comes that familiar feeling of fear. So what are some of the fears, the most common fears that we mostly have? Well, we have the fear of failure and the fear of success, which kind of sounds like a bit of a dichotomy, but it isn't really, because they are quite different. Most people don't do things because they're worried that they're not going to be able to succeed. So they are scared of failure. Maybe there have been incidences in our lives where we've done things and it didn't work out. Now, of course, a mistake is only a mistake if we don't learn from it. I mean, this world is set up for us to learn. It's a learning environment. So it's not about, well, you know, that didn't work out, I'm a failure, or that's it, the rest of my life I'm now labeled a failure. It's what we have told ourselves. It doesn't mean we're a failure. It just means whatever that was didn't work. And from that, we can take the information. How can we use the information when something doesn't work for us? Well, we just look at it and we say, okay, could I have done something differently that will allow me, if this situation or something similar shows up, to have a different outcome? So that's using it smartly, looking at what we can learn, what is the wisdom that we can gain from any situation and any experience that we've had. But often what we choose to do is we choose to go into the hurt, the feelings of failure. We feel, what will people think? We're concerned about, you know, how we're going to move forward. So, you know, this is just information. we don't have to take it personally. Having done something and it not working out does not mean that we have to label ourselves at all a failure. So it's always about, like a child learning to walk, you get up one more time, then you fell over. Now, with the fear of success, this is a different one altogether, because with success, a lot of people think of having a lot of responsibility, that there is almost a pressure to perform at a certain level, that once you have put a lot of energy into creating something, now you've got to keep it going. So for a lot of people, success can be a tremendous amount of pressure if you haven't learned how to do things in a way that you give yourself more balance. And, you know, one of the things I know that for a lot of people find a difficulty is, for instance, taking time out and taking vacations. It seems to be with today, so many people have no time, and what they don't do is take time out for themselves. And, of course, going on a holiday for a week with your laptop and your cell phone and your BlackBerry or whatever is not really an idea of having a vacation. But people are so into thinking, oh, I can't take this time off, and yet having some time out is the very thing that helps to recharge. You know, if you think of an athlete that's going to do something like a long-distance marathon, if an athlete was to actually perform at full level all the time, they would actually probably do some terrible things to their body, and they would be tired and exhausted, and they wouldn't be able to go on. Athletes know that there are resting times in between the exertion. And yet, when we think of people when they're in business or working, or even bringing up a family, because, you know, all of this, it takes a lot of time and energy. It's like we all need those little resting posts, those times of time out, to do little things that really assist us, whether it's just taking a walk in the park, whether it's sitting on the beach, whether it's reading a book, going to a movie, going shopping even, just something that gets you out of your own environment. It's really important that we balance life in that respect, because our body needs to regenerate. And the thing that's I find interesting is that for me, especially doing the kind of work that I do, there is a whole lot of time and energy goes into the thought and the creative process and allowing things kind of to come together. And if someone was to look at me, they might think, oh, she's not doing anything. But that's not necessarily the truth. And we need those moments where we have the inspiration can come through, where we allow time for those creative ideas to kind of gurgle and bubble and come together. And it's a very important part, because a lot of times I do know that earlier in my life, you know, I was such a major controller, and I was, you know, when I was going to do something, I was going to get all these things done, and I had these huge to-do lists, and I'd just get cracking, and if something needed to be done, I would just kind of jump in and tackle it. And what I've recognized is that in many respects, I might have taken 10 steps, whereas if I'd have stopped, had a clear intention of what I wanted as an outcome, allowed, you know, kind of a little bit of time for things to kind of bubble around and that creativity to come in, often I find that I can just do one or two or three things to get the same kind of result. Now, why would we do 10 things when we can do one or two or three? Well, basically because for many of us, and I know it was true for me at that time, doing something at least felt like I was achieving something, even if it wasn't getting the result. And it seems really weird, but when you actually look at it, it with kind of the altitude, it's like just doing something to give yourself a sense, well, I'm achieving something, I'm really there, I'm doing this, is rather a funny way of doing things. I feel it's far more important and on track that we do things in a way that's, you know, easy, that's less stressful, that we don't have to put so much energy and time into. And there are some things that we just need to do that. So it's knowing the difference of how much energy we need to do. But, you know, taking that time out, having the vacation, taking time to relax, letting the body just come into a different mode. And, you know, I've read a lot of studies which say sometimes going away for several 4-day vacations can actually be more beneficial than taking a 2-week holiday. And I remember when I was in my early 20s, I used to have 160 staff in 11 clinics and, you know, responsible for equivalent of about 10 million turnover a year. And my hours were 9 till 9, Monday to Friday, and I worked from home on the Saturday because the centers were open. And, you know, when I went on holiday for 2 weeks, it took me nearly 3 months to get back to the kind of speed that I was working at before I went on holiday, because I was just, it was almost like a machine. Thank God I was in my early 20s, because I think when we're younger, we have that ability to work those huge long hours and work under pressure and get things handled and done. But as we get older, we don't have as much energy. What we learn to do is get a lot smarter. And as we get a lot smarter, it means that we don't have to put anywhere near the same amount of energy to produce results, because that's called experience. It's called wisdom. It's called all the things we've done that haven't worked and learning from it through our lives. It's taking everything that we've ever done and being able to utilize what we need so that it's kind of in a way like a shortcut. It's because we have gotten experienced. We know how to do it. We just have like that innate wisdom because we've done things so many times, and we make it look easy, which to us it is because we have done it so many times. But to somebody where it's newer and starting out on doing something would look at me, oh gosh, they make it look so easy. Well, practice makes it look easy. I mean, if you look at anybody, whether it's like an equestrian who's at the Olympic Games doing dressage, or I love the, you know, some of the ice skaters. I mean, look at Torvald and Dean when they got their perfect six. That looked magnificent and easy because they had rehearsed it and rehearsed it and practiced and practiced. And that is usually what happens, is people who make things look that effortless, it's usually because they have actually practiced and done things for a long time and they have got it down. And then when you get into that place of being able to stay present and handing it over in a way, of not being attached to the outcome, of just staying present and allowing, you know, that co-creation with God, then what you get is true inspiration. And I love that when I see like a Torvald and Dean and they do something that just seems so perfect. I love Cleo Lane and Johnny Dankworth, and a few years back I went to see them perform live a couple of different times, and that moment when somebody just sings and your whole body just goes into shivers because you just know that it's like they've just done it 100% and they're right on, and it's impeccable, and it's just absolutely a beautiful thing to behold when anybody is really just doing something just beautifully. And so, you know, every one of these people who do things magnificently, it's usually because they've been doing it for a long time. So don't give yourself a hard time. Just, you know, recognize that life is about gathering experiences. It's about learning. It's about gaining wisdom. It's about growing. And the lovely thing today is that we have so many people who are so good at what they do that if we're really smart and clever, we can shortcut. We don't necessarily have to do all the hard work because they have done it for us. Now, there are certain things that we just unfortunately seem to need to go into and learn from our own experiences, and a lot of the things around relationships seem to be like that. No matter how much we may be told or see things that don't work, we have our own set of you know, lessons to learn through. But, you know, we see a lot of people these days, you know, in terms of the books and Oprah, and, you know, there's just so much available even in just listening to people on this radio channel, BBS Radio, people with a lot of wisdom, a lot that they can share. And, you know, we're at a time where people coming on the planet, to me, are coming in with such high-light energy. You know, they don't have to do it tough and hard. I mean, how many years ago when there was, what was it, EST, and everything was really tough, hard, and difficult, and really kind of giving it to everybody, and, you know, people really had to, you know, to lock the doors and keep them in there and whatever they used to do. But you know what? It's not necessary anymore. Because in the 70s, you know, people were still, you know, it's all quite new to a lot of people, a lot of self-development, a lot of self-awareness. Now, it's like, it can be much easier. We can just have a clear intention. We have different tools that we now have that we can make things a little easier. So one of the good things to do is just have a clear intention that you want your life to be graceful and easy. Because that's a great way to say, hey, you know what, I'm looking for that inspiration, I'm looking for that assistance, that my life can be a lot easier. And, you know, having grown up with a father who said, you know, things were tough and hard and difficult, well, you know, that was true for that generation. But it's not true now. Things don't have to be tough. It's what we decide we create. And if we're now willing to co-create with God and go for the loving, go for the joy, go for the ease and the grace, go for our healing, then, you know, maybe our lives can be just a lot easier. Now, many of us grew up wanting approval. I was like that. I was the good little girl growing up. And so it was like, oh, you know, if I'm good, then I'll be okay. And again, growing up, my sister and my father also had their issues. So, you know, I used to kind of think, oh, you know, if I keep quiet, you know, I won't get into any trouble here because my sister and my father, my sister was always in trouble. So I thought, wow, you see, we on one level we think we're very smart. I thought it was very smart, and at the time it probably wasn't a bad way to go. Unfortunately, a lot of things that happen to us in our childhood, what we do as these defense mechanisms is we don't necessarily update them. So one of the things that might be good to look at is if you have some automatic defense mechanisms, and, you know, maybe it's time as an adult to start looking at what does work and what doesn't work for you. And I learned earlier on in my relationships that being good and keeping my mouth shut is not exactly going to be very good for building relationships. So, you know, we often want the approval of our parents, of our peers. You know, I remember at school doing little things like a teacher would be coming down the corridor and I'd open the door for her and stuff like this, and she'd be miles down the corridor, so it wasn't really necessarily appropriate, but I wanted to do the right thing. I wanted approval. I didn't realize how much of a child I was like that. You know, and we often judge ourselves, so we think people are judging us, so we want their approval desperately. And it is a bit of a waste of energy. It's really important that we just come into that place of letting go of our judgments. And I've talked a lot over the weeks about forgiveness and just getting into the forgiveness of I forgive myself for judging myself for feeling like I need others' approval, or I forgive myself for judging myself not feeling good enough in myself that I need others' approval. So, you know, the judgment, it's about forgiving the judgment, not forgiving the action, so that, because it's the judgment that creates the karma, that creates the difficulties with ourselves. Many of us growing up had fears of being alone or abandoned. I mean, in some cases, this is absolutely a reality. So people, for instance, who find out that they have been adopted, for some people, they feel that. Some people, even in a family, just think that, you know, that they're aliens. They can't possibly, you know, be their parents because, you know, their lives are so miserable or whatever it is that's going on for them. And because of that, a lot of us can stay in relationships that don't work because we don't really want to be alone. And, you know, it's hard when you are so outwardly focused that you think that, you know, other people are going to be able to give you what you need, because the reality is we need to give it to ourselves. So if we don't want to feel rejected, if we don't want to feel alone or abandoned, then we really need to give ourselves that the loving. We need to do things that help us with our self-esteem, because the irony is that if we have, for instance, a fear of rejection, often what we will do is in relationships set something up in motion so somebody rejects us, so that we can go, well, we were right, because we don't like to be wrong. So if we don't like to be wrong, then we keep setting things up. That means that we will be right. So if inside we think, oh, gosh, you know, I've got people always reject me, then what we may not realize is that we've set that in motion. We don't realize we've set it in motion. We get a reaction, and that is that we get abandoned. We get rejected, and then we go, there, see, I'm right. That always happens to me. However, we create it. We're the magnet that creates that. If you have a magnet inside you, we attract to ourselves who we are. So if we have, you know, a fear of rejection and abandonment and fear of success and failure, guess what we keep on, in many respects, drawing to us, because that's what we're holding inside of ourselves. But the other is true, and that is that if we're holding loving and caring and respect and trusting, guess what's going to come to us? And with the fears, we also sometimes have a fear of intimacy. And this often in relationships is about, are we willing to be vulnerable? And I know this was a huge one for me, huge one for me. I remember once going to a meeting, and it was with an organization, Insight, that does wonderful self-development trainings. And I was assisting on a team at that time, and I remember something devastating happened to me. Well, you know, when you're in your 20s, everything's, you know, I think it was I my 20s? I was probably early 30s. You know, when you're younger, a lot of things devastate you, more so than as you get older. I think, and I'll qualify that, because there are some things that are truly devastating, but I'm talking about things that we build out of proportion, so I think that's a better way of expressing that. So something had happened to me, and I remember I was outside waiting to go into the meeting, which had started, and I was crying. And I thought, there is no way I can walk into that room while I am crying. It was, to me, it was a thought mortified me. And yet, there was a group of people that could not have been more loving, more supportive, more helpful, more willing to be of assistance to me. But I had this thing about not being vulnerable. It was, to me, it was, I guess, a sign of weakness, and I think that's what a lot of people may equate it to. But it takes tremendous strength and courage to be authentically who we are. And that means that if I am upset and if something is disturbing me, that I can just allow that to be and allow people in. But one of the other areas was not allowing people in. I was not into receiving, because I was very self-sufficient and could do everything for myself. And, you know, these are all stages that we can go through until we really learn that the only thing that really matters is the loving. And when I eventually did calm down enough to go into the room, of course, everybody could tell I'd been crying, so of course it was like, you know, are you okay? And, you know, I got a lot of loving and support. And for me at the time, I have to say, it was kind of hard to let it in. Because if we aren't open to receiving, if we're not open to that loving, if we're not open to that support, because in that days I had a belief I had to do it by myself, and that was a little bit again about how I was brought up, to be self-sufficient, you do things yourself, you don't rely on anybody. But in actual fact, we're all interdependent. And, you know, there's been many, many times in my life where I've reached out because I've needed assistance. And there have been many, many times where people have reached out to me, and, you know, I will always help if I can. And I know most people will do the same thing. So, you know, it's good to come back into what's real about us, that's who we really are, not the kind of the bravado, not the kind of the front that we put up, and not, you know, hiding our true feelings. Of course, in early relationships, what it showed up for me was that, in, you know, I was not sharing what was going on for me. I was, so in a way, it's a withhold. which is a form of dishonesty. We're not honest if we can't express who and what we are. So for me, I had a lot of really big lessons, very big lessons, very early on, because I had a tremendous amount of success early in my life. And, you know, and then life changes. And how you define success, which we'll talk about a little bit later, becomes a little bit different. So what else are some of the fears? Well, there's the fear of the unknown. Most of us like to understand things, or we want to know what's going to happen. And I think it was Wayne Dyer wrote that amazing book, You Will See It When You Believe It. Not, is that right? You will see it when you believe it, not you will believe it when you see it, which is how we want to do things. Yeah, that's the right way around. In other words, most of us want proof. We want to see what's coming. We want to know in order for us to believe in something. But as he quite rightly points out, it is the other way around. We have to have that faith and believe in ourselves and believe in what we're doing for things to show up for us. And a lot of ways that we work with the Spirit and the Christ and working as co-creators with God is often, in many respects, back to front from the way that we've always been necessarily brought up. It's about being authentically yourself. It's about surrendering a lot of the ways that we think we know how to do things. You know, when we control, we think we know. But in actual fact, you know, God knows how to do things in total perfection. We often don't. So how do we allow ourselves to surrender to whatever you call that, and please, whatever it works for you, if it's unconditional loving, universal loving, you know, whatever teacher, guru, you know, whatever your spiritual master is, it's fine to kind of substitute words. I'm just using the words that work for me, and I don't want to impose that on you, so please put in there what works for you. We are often frightened of the unknown. But, you know, we want to understand things before we do things. And yet, you know, if you go into a room, you switch on a light, you know, the light switch to put the light on. You don't have to understand electricity. You just know if you turn the switch, it comes on. And if it doesn't come on, you know, you check either the light bulb or make sure that the electricity is working. You still don't have to know how electricity works in order for you to work with it. And that's true of a lot of things in life. We don't necessarily have to understand. And often the understanding comes later, when we have done something. So maybe letting go of the fear of the unknown. I mean, life can be, you know, rather exciting. And if we use our intuition, if we use our support systems, life can be quite an adventure. So if you're one of those adventurers who, you know, has to have the roadmap and, you know, 20 gallons of water just in case, and, you know, has to do everything to the extreme to feel safe, you know, it's like, well, maybe just loosen up a little bit. And it's like, trust that what you need will be there for you. Trust that, you know, if something needs to be done, it'll come forward. I mean, I just had an instance of that actually right today, a couple of minutes before I was waiting for the phone call to connect for this program. For some reason, I just thought, you know, I'm just going to check that the telephone switch is properly in the wall. And it wasn't. Now, and I nearly ignored it, which, of course, if I'd have ignored what I got, we wouldn't be talking now. But it's like, some, you know, I find that when I just really am relaxed and I just trust and I stay in the moment, I get the information that I need. And I was able to put the phone properly back in the jack. And a minute later, a few seconds later, Don from the station phoned me. He was like, I've been trying to get hold of you. So, but we got there. So that's the most important thing. Often we have fear of pain. So we have times in the past when we've been hurt, we've been in pain, and people have let us down. And, you know, it's a choice level what we do. We can choose to get hurt. I know it's something that you hear a lot in relationship. You hurt me, or he did this, or she did that, and that hurt me. The reality is we have a choice of whether we get hurt or not. because it's our hurt, it's our feelings inside of us. Somebody can do something and we have a choice of how we respond to that person. We can respond in loving, we can respond in hurt, we can respond in just staying neutral and just, you know, just saying, okay, next. So we have choices on how we do this. So again, we have fear of pain and hurt, but it is a choice level. And just because something happened to us before, this is a brand new moment. It doesn't mean because it happened before, it'll happen again. Now, there's a difference between certain things which you know will repeat themselves, but often something may have happened and we may have had certain fears in the past, but we're in a different situation today, and we can often label it as being the same. So it's good sometimes not to label things, not to judge things, but just to look at the situation, and if there is hurt and fear and different things coming up, it may be just a great time to maybe meditate just to, or sit somewhere quietly, do some deep breathing, sort of try and come into a greater center, you know, whether it's, you know, walking is very good for that because it helps to release negativity out of the body. Some exercise just helps us just to keep our bodies a lot clearer and helps to kind of shunt out that kind of fear and those feelings. So, you know, just take a little moment and sort of see if that pain, if that hurt has a message for you. Now, often if we get headaches or things happen in our bodies or stomach aches or whatever, you know, we take the pills and the aspirins and the, you know, something to deaden it. But really, it's kind of like killing the messenger. What can we do in that moment and say, well, look, if this is happening to me right now, what is the information that I can learn from? What is it right now that this is actually trying to tell me? And maybe if you just go in and kind of touch into that fear, touch into that pain, that hurt, and just see if the information can come forward that will give you some assistance in how to, you know, move out of this, how to heal this, how to let go of it, what the information is so that you can let go. Another fear that we have, and I think this was definitely a biggie for me, was I didn't want to look stupid. You know, at times when I've opened my mouth and I thought, oh, my God, what did I just say? You know, that awful feeling of putting my foot in it. Times when I felt that I did or said things that were stupid and there were a lot of other people and they all knew it and I was absolutely mortified. Of course, now if I do something that seems like that, I can laugh about it. And that, I think, is the maturity that we develop when we have a greater sense of who we are and, you know, we don't have to be, that mortification was a choice. That was where I went. That was a kind of a reflex action. But in actual fact, I could just as easily giggled and laughed and said, oh my goodness, what did I just say? Gosh, isn't that funny? So, you know, we have choices. And I've just got this tiny little part of a newspaper clipping that I clipped out a long time ago, and I have no idea where it's from. So I apologize for not crediting the author, but it's called Don't Be Afraid to Fail. You failed many times, although you don't remember. You fell down the first time you tried to walk. You almost drowned the first time you tried to swim. Did you hit the ball the first time you swung the bat? Heavy hitters, the ones who hit the most home runs, also strike out a lot. R.H. Macy failed 7 times before his story in New York caught on. Novelist John Creasy got 753 rejection slips before he published 564 books. Babe Ruth hit 714 home runs, but he also struck out 1,330 times. The message is, don't worry about failure. Worry instead about the chances you miss when you don't even try. And I think that's very true. It's really important that we just keep going. It's failure, it's just feedback. You know, what do we do? Do we take it personally? I remember many, many years ago, one of the things that used to bother me was criticism. And people would say something, and 2 weeks later, I would still be churning it over in my mind. And, you know, oh, my God, I'm a terrible person. This is what I did. What do they think of me? And eventually, I got some information that helped me to change the way that I was looking at things. And somebody said, well, when somebody criticizes you, it's either true of them or it's true of you. So that kind of took a little bit of the pressure off, because people often project onto you something about themselves. So it might not even be true. So then what I was able to do is I was able to go, well, okay, let me see, is this true or not? And if it's true, well, then it's information that I can use to learn about myself and be able to course correct, and I don't have to let my emotions jump in there with me. And if it isn't true, then why am I getting into so much angst? Because it's often, you know, as I said, people project onto you. When they criticize you, it's often a lot more about them. And Deepak Chopra said we're defined by our limitations. So how do we move past a lot of our limitations? Because, you know, it's important, instead of focusing on our fears and things, it's like, what are our values? What are our beliefs and attitudes? What are our thoughts? Because that helps us to determine how we actually see the world. You know, what's success? I mean, how do you define it? I mean, often it's about doing and moving forward, which is what I've been learning. You know, what if you fail? So what? I mean, I had a business fail. I went into bankruptcy. I had a, you know, horrendous time. But in fact, I actually learned more about business and how to do business than I ever did before. Because what I was doing is I was more concerned about keeping the staff on and keeping things running the way that they were, instead of looking at the situation the way it truly was when the country I was in was going through a deep recession. And really, in order to survive, I had to make some really tough decisions. And for some reason, I didn't want to make those tough decisions. So in the end, the business closed, and I ended up in personal bankruptcy because I had put everything into it, and, you know, I wasn't a person who'd kind of stashed money away, which I know a lot of people who have those situations do, but I didn't, you know, and a lot of people are going through that at the moment, over the years, bankruptcy, you know, like in the old days, you know, getting divorced was a shocking thing. Now it's quite commonplace, and I think early on a lot of people going bankrupt, there was a stigma about it, but now a lot of people go bankrupt. It's becoming more normal. It just says that I tried to do something. I didn't plan to fail. And, you know, I made some decisions that in retrospect could have been different, but at the time I didn't know any better. So we do the best that we can. And sometimes it's important not to keep punishing ourselves, because for a long time I tried to just sort of pay everything back, and I just was having no life whatsoever, and I wasn't really paying very much back, and I, you know, gave myself a hard time with the judgments of what was going on. So none of that was very productive. I couldn't get on with my life, and I wasn't really making any difference in terms of the dent in the kind of the money that was owed. And in the end, I made the very difficult decision, because somebody once said to me, you know, if you'd have just gone to jail because you'd done something wrong, you'd have probably been out in a few months. And here you are, years later, still going through, you know, this terrible time because something happened, your business went. You know, at what point are you just going to give this up, let go of it, and move on? So sometimes we have to make difficult decisions, and sometimes things don't work out. But it doesn't mean I'm a failure. It meant the business didn't work out. And what I did was learned from it some of the things that I did that now I probably would do differently. And that to me is a measure of success. Because what I've done is I've taken something that didn't work, and now I've learned from that, and I can implement that in other things in my life. So, you know, when we equate money and titles and success as being, you know, that all the kind of the material trappings, then we really kind of get caught up in that. Really, in spirit, success is about loving. Because, you know, we've often been wired to believe that if we have what we want, then we'll finally get to do what we want, and then we'll be happy. But in actual fact, it's reverse. how do we create that place inside of us where we are happy, where we have the freedom, where we're in the loving, where we hold that peaceful place? Because it's from that place that we'll be able to do the things that we truly want and have the things that we think will make us happy. So we're a magnet. It's about drawing into us what it is that we really want. And, you know, do we have the courage to really do what we really want? Do you believe that you can have what you want? That's a good question. I love Marianne Williamson, and although this is often quoted, I'm going to do it again because I just think it's so magnificent, and it's what Nelson Mandela spoke of in his inauguration speech in 94, and he says, she wrote, "Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who are we to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small doesn't serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about shrinking. We're all meant to shine as children do. We are born to manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just some of us, it's everyone. And as we let our light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others." I think that is just so wonderful because it's about each and every one of us is a brilliant light. John Morton, in his book, You Are the Blessings, who was my guest last week, he says, "As we reach out to others, we will meet up with our limitations. We will find that we are doing work that we do not know how to do completely. In the Bible it says, 'Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven.'" That's from Matthew chapter 5, verse 16. "We are called upon to be open to doing God's work as co-creators," which can be humbling to acknowledge. And it is humbling because, you know, we can be co-creators with God. And it's really important to focus more on what it is that you want. And, you know, it's a really good thing to make a list of what you've accomplished. What are your successes? What are the things that you have done that have been your wins? Because it's just so easy to focus on the stuff that we did that we might not have done, we think didn't do well. And yet, looking back with retrospect, which is 2020 vision, how often are some of those things that we declared as catastrophic, horrendous, difficult, challenging, how many of those things that happen can we see the benefit? Can we see the growth? Can we see something good that came out of it? So we can never really truly know. And in the moment, often we may not be able to see the goodness. We may not be able to see that, hey, maybe we were just off track a little bit here. Maybe that spirit just gently pushing us back on that right road again. I talked last week about the long and winding road. You know, maybe we were off on a big bend somewhere when we could have just been on the short and narrow. So if we could just look at everything that happens to us for our benefit, that it's to assist us, to uplift us, if we can look at everything without getting emotionally attached, if we can look at everything as just information, if we can hold into the loving, because that's really what we need to do, just come back into the loving. As we hold in that loving, then we're kind, we're compassionate to ourselves. And just know, this too shall pass. No matter what is going on, this too shall pass. I always say that God tests those he loves the most, and he loves me a lot. So God tests those he loves. So we're all loved because I think a lot of us are being tested. So maybe, you know, it's time to be outrageous. You know, stop being small. Be outrageous. Start looking in terms of what could we really do. Life, you know, our lives are a choice. I just had a friend, Robbie, who passed away this morning, and when I was talking to somebody, they were saying that, you know, she really completed the things that she wanted to do. She actually did a lot of completions. And that's a magnificent way when people are at that place of transition to be able to complete things so that everything we do is like in the movie set, it's a wrap. Do everything and complete. I had another friend who died a number of years ago, and I remember her telling me about she wanted to get her master's. And she started a master's program, and financially things were really tight for her. And she went to her financial advisor, and he basically said to her, look, this isn't going to give you any more money once you've got your master's. This isn't going to help you in your career. Really, this is what you need to do, and you need to create more money and whatever. And she was sharing all this with us. Well, anyway, she ended up getting that asbestos cancer and died within 12 months of having that. And yet, the magnificent thing was she continued with the master's despite what she had been told by a so-called expert, because inside her she knew it was something she wanted to fulfill. And in that last 12 months, she had the most unbelievable relationship with her ex-husbands, with her children, with her family, with her friends. And she did it magnificently. And it's just wonderful and inspiring to me when people just can really do that and show us by example of what it is that, even knowing that life can be short, that live it, complete everything, and, you know, to really, really live it magnificently. So, you know, staying on the planet and choosing to really live your life to the full can actually be quite a challenge, but it's one I want to issue to us all, including myself. What can we all do to be more loving? What can we do to be more prosperous, to come into greater health, wealth, and happiness? What can we do to make our lives easier? What can we do to be of service to others, so that we can really spread a little joy in other people's lives? Because, you know, that's what we're here to do. We're here to share. We're here to be of service. We're here to be loving, to be caring, to be joyful. It's really important to do that. And I want to quote a little bit more from Marianne Williamson, because she just says this so magnificently, and this is from her book, A Woman's Worth. Excuse me while I just have a little drink of water then. She says, just as children grow by playing games in which they imagine themselves to be grown-ups, so we are meant to grow by imagining ourselves to be bigger than we are right now. You need not apologize for being brilliant, talented, gorgeous, rich, or smart. Your success doesn't take away from it anyone else's. It actually increases the possibility that others can have it too. Your money increases your capacity to give money to others. Your joy increases your capacity to give joy to others. Your love increases the capacity to give love to others. Your playing small serves no one. It is a sick game. It's old thinking, and it's dire for the planet. Stop it immediately. Come home to the castle. So in closing today, gosh, it's about really standing up tall within ourselves. It's time for us to recognize that we're blessed to be on the planet at this time. It's time for us to recognize that we're magnificent beings, that we're co-creators with God, that God is happy for us to have whatever we want. Just let God know, what do you want? It is time to be amazing. It's time to be grown up, as it were, and to step up truly into our hearts and extend our loving from our hearts to all those on the planet, and know that we're serving ourselves and that we are serving each other. God bless us all. Beirush Beishan.